Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga.
The engagements that I'll have throughout my time here in Nigeria reflect the depth of this partnership of now more than six decades, and the way that our collaboration is vital and maybe more vital than ever to tackling shared challenges and actually delivering results for our people, which is what our responsibility really is.
U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, on his first visit to Nigeria, delivers a key speech on U.S.-Africa policy to the economic community of West African states.
It's undeniable fact that commodities have gone up, you know, quite a number of issues which these demonstrators have cited. They are real on the ground, but probably it would be another question to say what should be done. Should we need to demonstrate or sit down and talk?
Police in Malawi used tear gas to stop clashes between demonstrators protesting unemployment and the high cost of living, and a group of counter-demonstrators who attacked the rally soon after it started.
I think the COP26 was COP for action. COP for action meaning it's now or never. Out of everything that has been discussed, let all those initiatives materialize. We actually need what we talk about to materialize. I talk about something beyond the podium. I need to see it on the ground because that is what is affecting me.
And the United Nations Children Fund representative in Zimbabwe calls on young people to be at the forefront of the fight against climate change. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. At least seven people were killed and 11 others injured in southwestern Somalia on Friday in a bomb blast that targeted a crowded market. The blast, according to an official, occurred in the town of Badele, located around 60 kilometers west of Baidoa, the provincial capital of Bay Region. No group has so far claimed responsibility for the attack. However, the town's district commissioner, Muhammad Issa Arase, has accused the Somali terrorist group Al-Shabaab of being behind the attack. This latest blast comes as the Horn of African nation has concluded its indirect elections for the 54 senators in the upper house of the federal parliament, including 14 women, and is gearing up its efforts to conclude the election of the 275 seats in the lower house before the end of the year. In July, the Islamic militant group Al-Shabaab threatened to disrupt the upcoming elections and vowed to attack electoral delegates, choosing lawmakers in parliamentary elections. On Wednesday's briefing, the United Nations Security Council meeting on Somalia, James Swan, head of the UN assistant mission in Somalia, said nearly 1,000 civilians have been killed or injured in armed conflict so far this year in the country, with the group Al-Shabaab responsible for some two-thirds of civilian casualties. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, on his first visit to Nigeria, delivered a key speech on Thursday on U.S.-Africa policy to ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States. The top U.S. diplomat met Thursday with leaders of Nigeria, Africa's most populous country. They discussed cooperation on the pandemic, climate change, security, and human rights concerns. Timothy Abiezu reports from Abuja.
Secretary of State Anthony Blinken made the announcement Friday at the ECOWAS headquarters in Abuja, Nigeria's capital, his second stop since he began his three-nation Africa tour this week. Blinken said, quote, the U.S. president intends to host the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit to drive high-level diplomacy and engagement that can make effective cooperation possible, end quote. He gave no details on when or where the summit may occur. On Thursday, after meeting with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari and top government officials, Blinken and Nigeria's foreign affairs minister signed an agreement for the U.S. to give Nigeria $2.1 billion to support healthcare, education, agriculture, and good governance. Blinken also discussed renewed cooperation with Nigerian authorities to tackle the coronavirus pandemic, climate change, security, and human rights concerns.
The engagements that I'll have throughout my time here in Nigeria reflect the depth of this partnership of now more than six decades, and the way that our collaboration is vital, and maybe more vital than ever, to tackling shared challenges and actually delivering results for our people, which is what our responsibility really is.
Nigeria has seen increasing waves of violence and a decline in human rights record in the last few years. This week, more than a year after bloody protests against police brutality, a Lagos panel report accused security agents of using excessive force to disperse protesters last October, leading to the death of at least 11 people. Blinken also met with members of Nigeria's civil society groups on Friday. While praising the panel's investigation, Blinken said the government must be more accountable.
We anticipate and look to the state and the federal government's response to the findings and expect those to include steps that ensure accountability and address the grievances of the victims and their families.
The Secretary of State's visit comes amid concerns about China's growing influence in Africa and the increasing debts that many African countries owe Chinese companies. On Friday, Blinken said the U.S. engagements with Africa have, quote, no strings attached, end quote. Nigerian Foreign Affairs Minister Geoffrey Onyema had this to say.
It was just a huge infrastructure deficit that we're facing in this country. And, you know, and we saw a great opportunity with the Chinese. I mean, they're used to a lot of these huge capital projects and infrastructure projects. You know, we would have gone with anybody else that was providing something at a competitive rate for us.
Blinken began his Africa tour Wednesday in Nairobi and will end it with a visit to Dakar, Senegal, where he will meet with President Macky Sall. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Police in Malawi Friday used tear gas to stop clashes between demonstrators who are protesting unemployment and the high cost of living and a group of counter-demonstrators who attacked the rally soon after it started. Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre.
The demonstrators chanted anti-government songs while carrying placards demanding that President Lazarus Chakwera fulfill his campaign promises like creating 1 million jobs, providing free water and electricity connections. However, the event was rudely interrupted when a group of counter-demonstrators, suspected supporters of Chakwera, arrived and mercilessly beat up protesters. Some demonstrators were robbed of their valuables, including mobile phones. The running battles prompted the police to use tear gas to disperse the crowd. The situation did not amuse protest leader Boni Kalindo, who was among those affected by the tear gas. He says it's very sad indeed. We are not fighting with anyone here. I don't know what the problem is. He says we notified authorities about our intention to hold the demonstrations. The aborted protests came 2 days after Kalindo, an influential comedian and former lawmaker, resigned as a youth director of the United Transformation Movement Party, which forms part of the governing Tonse Alliance. Kalindo said he resigned because of poor administration by President Chakwera and the failure of Vice President Saulos Chilima to help Chakwera properly run the affairs of the country. However, officials of the UTM party had earlier warned against the street action. Sherif Kais is a political science lecturer at Blantyre International University. He says the protesters were justified in holding the rally.
Not even a single one would say things are not going well unless if you have a blind eye on things. So it's an undeniable fact that commodities have gone up. You know, quite a number of issues which these demonstrators have cited, they are real on the ground. But probably it would be another question to say what should be done. Should we need to demonstrate or we sit down and talk?
Information Minister Gospel Gazako told a press conference this week that the government realizes the problem Malawians are going through now. He said the president will soon address the nation on corrective measures. Meanwhile, local radio reported that Boni Kalindo and a few demonstrators regrouped this Friday afternoon and delivered a petition to the Blantyre City Council. In the petition, they gave President Chakwera 14 days to respond to their grievances or face a wave of protests. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Ugandan police say they have killed five suspected terrorists, including a Muslim cleric, during raids following two deadly suicide bombings Tuesday in the capital, Kampala. Police say they are looking for a second cleric who is suspected of recruiting youth to carry out terrorist attacks. Analysts warn Ugandan police must enforce security according to the law to avoid encouraging further recruitment. Halima Athman reports from Kampala.
Ugandan security agencies Thursday morning raided the home of a suspected terrorist in Kampala, killing him and arresting his wife. Ugandan police say Sheikh Muhammad Chirivu, alias Abbas Chirivu, was involved in recruiting personnel into the ranks of the Allied Democratic Forces rebel group and promoting the reemergence of ADF cells within Kampala. Since Tuesday's suicide bombings, which killed four people, security agencies have carried out raids in different parts of the country. Police say a total of 21 suspected ADF terrorists and collaborators have been arrested in Kampala and the districts of Luero and Ntoroko. Police spokesman Fred Enanga says four others were killed.
During the violent encounter with them in Ntoroko, there was an exchange of gunfire, and our counter-terror operatives managed to put out of action a group of four suspected terrorists who form part of the recruitment and logistical coordination network.
Enanga says the four suspected terrorists were closely linked to the number five commander of the ADF, only identified as Lubinsa. He says they were crossing back from the Democratic Republic of the Congo through one of the poorest crossing points in Chisege, Ntoroko district. The counterterrorism unit is now searching for another cleric.
We are now intensifying the manhunt for Sheikh Suleiman Nsubuga, who is one of the main actors behind the recruitment, training, radicalization. He's been providing material support and resources to the domestic terror cells and also providing resources and materials on the use of explosives and destructive devices.
The ongoing raids are raising questions on whether Uganda's security forces are operating within the law or are just being reactionary. Jason Stans is director of the Congo Research Group at New York University. He says the ADF, which is allegedly affiliated with Islamic State and has carried out attacks in Rwanda and Mozambique, in addition to Uganda, is using violent attacks not to overthrow the Ugandan regime, but to attract international recruits from sympathizers and funding from both the region and abroad. He says the ADF is also useful for some governments in the region, particularly Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo, because it gives them an excuse to crack down on opposition groups and attract international support, especially from the United States. But Stans warns the current security reaction will only further the cause of the ADF.
Nothing would boost the ADF's recruitment drive more than to having a violent crackdown on Muslims or even on people affiliated with the Tablighi sect, for example, in Uganda. And so it's important when dealing with threats like this to properly calibrate the response so as not to exacerbate the problem itself.
In a statement Tuesday, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni tried to reassure Ugandans, saying the government was more than ready to deal with urban terrorism. He referred to the killed suspects as manipulated victims of confusion. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Police in Uganda suspect that a rebel group called the Allied Democratic Forces, the ADF, has carried out a recent series of suicide bombings in the capital, Kampala. The ADF is affiliated to the Islamic State, or ISIS, the International Terror Network. The latest attacks killed 3 people and injured 36 others in Kampala on Tuesday. Martin Iwi is a terrorist expert at the Institute of Security Studies in Pretoria and the former head of the African Union Commission's counterterrorism program. He told reporter Darren Taylor the ADF has deep roots in Uganda.
They were set up in Uganda in the early 1990s by disgruntled Muslim people who thought that Museveni had sidelined them or was not listening to them, was not taking care of them, was not involving them in governance of Uganda. So it is a group that operates now largely in the DRC, the eastern part of the DRC, where they have been carrying out numerous attacks. Especially last year, it was estimated that they carried out over 500 attacks in which more than 1,000 people were killed. So it is a group that is now well known within the region. It is no longer just a threat to Uganda.
Judging from what you said, Martin, they have quite a big capacity. Where are they getting this capacity from to carry out all these attacks?
They have been in the Democratic Republic of the Congo for some years now, where they have been involved in various illicit activities. They have been involved in illicit mining. They have been involved in illicit timber logging. They have been involved in other organized crime activities. So that has really permitted them to mobilize a lot of resources, financial resources for that matter. And also their recent contact, their recent alliance with the Islamic State will have also brought them a lot of resources. With these factors, they have been able to acquire not just capacity in terms of resources, but technical capacity. If you look at the kind of attacks that they have carried out recently, demonstrate a group that has been training, demonstrate a group that has certainly been perfecting the art of terrorism.
Why is Islamic State and the ADF targeting Uganda?
For them, attacks is a form of communication. They want to hit where they believe that the news can spread very quickly, people can be terrified, people can be intimidated. And you can see that after the attacks in Kampala, people vacated downtown Kampala, people ran away. This is exactly what the terrorists want. As I said, that they originated from Uganda, they will always want to come back to Uganda. And these attacks certainly show that they are making a solid return to Uganda.
Now, President Yoweri Museveni moved fast to announce that scores of suspects have been arrested following the latest bombings. He also said that apart from hunting the terrorists, Uganda's strategy of vigilance was minimizing damage. What do you think of the Ugandan government's efforts so far to curb terrorism, Martin?
They have better capacity now. They've gone through various trainings. We at the Institute for Security Studies, we've also provided training to Ugandan law enforcement agencies. They do have the basic capacity to be able to combat terrorism. Our trainings emphasize the need to respect human rights. Our trainings emphasize the need for precision so that there is collateral damage is minimized. So we are really hoping that if elements of the police force that we train are the one leading the countermeasures against the Islamic State or against the ADF, the Allied Democratic Forces, this could be effective and this could actually lead to some achievement. It is not just a matter for the police, it's a matter for the society, it's a matter for the criminal justice. And we believe that if all these tools are put into use, Uganda will be able to flush out the ADF as they have done before.
Suicide bombings, such a difficult thing to stop. Is there any way for the Ugandan authorities to prevent them?
If you are not able to detect the individuals who are carrying the suicide belt, it's very difficult. So intelligence is really about to identify who are the members of the group, where they are, who is supporting them, who is harboring them, and then you can go after to intercept some of their activities to isolate the suicide terrorists, which is what Ugandans have done very successfully, which is why you can see that 3 suicide bombers kill only 3 people. The damage could have been a lot worse in terms of human casualties, but because of some of the measures put in place, that's why suicide terrorism, recent attacks have not killed as many people as most suicide terrorists do.
That was Martin Ewi, a terrorist expert at the Institute of Security Studies in Pretoria, South Africa, speaking with reporter Darren Taylor. Over 100 exhibitors have gathered in the affluent Sandton neighborhood of Johannesburg, South Africa, for a 4-day cannabis expo ending on Sunday. The expo features extraction equipment and a food market filled with cannabis-infused foods and drinks. Meanwhile, the stage is a hive of activity, with industry experts conducting workshops on how various stakeholders can turn this once illegal substance into a multi-million dollar business. Tuso Kumalo has the story.
Cannabis, a plant once deemed illegal, has drawn hundreds of people from in and outside South Africa. The exhibition hall is filled up with the chemical compound cannabidiol, or CBD, and hemp products, including tinctures, sprays, creams, and clothing. Product manufacturers are also showcasing a variety of equipment used to extract medical and pharmaceutical products from the plant. Alan Glenz, Chief Executive Officer of Juicy Fields, the company that sponsored the exhibition, told VOA that the days of viewing cannabis in a negative way are gone.
Cannabis right now is not so, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. You see a drug, I see medicine. You see a medicine, I see a drug. It's a cannabis business. The business is very profitable. To pay taxes, importing for the exporting, this is very good.
A food market is part of the exhibition showcasing a number of products including alcoholic cannabis CBD cocktails, cannabis beer, coffee, mushroom, cookies and biltong, a lean meat that's salted and dried into strips. Joe Putter from Cannabinoids Nutrition is one of the exhibitors.
By supplementing the endocannabinoid system with extracts of cannabinoids and the various phytocannabinoids found within the cannabis plant, we're able to stimulate the body's natural endocannabinoid system, which helps the body to heal itself. So basically, we're providing the nutrients required to heal the body as the body heals itself with its own endocannabinoid system.
The Cannabis Expo Director, Silas Howarth, told VOA that the trade fair contributes significantly in bringing together stakeholders to explore the potential of the cannabis industry.
At this expo, we've got over 100 different businesses operating, you know, within the cannabis sector. So it's quite amazing to see, and it's growing and booming. Even through these last 2 years with the pandemic, the cannabis industry has continued to grow, and it's fantastic to be able to showcase all of these advancements in the industry, the new products, the new services around cannabis that are here at the Cannabis Expo.
It is estimated that cannabis has the potential of earning Africa up to $7.1 billion by 2023. Several countries, including South Africa, are in the process of legalizing the growing of the plant for medicinal use, a move that would create jobs and opportunities for small farmers. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Straight Talk Africa, as we discuss the return of Africa's stolen art. France repatriated 26 looted colonial-era artifacts to Benin. Now museums in Europe and the US are rethinking what to do with their African art collections. We'll discuss art restitution and reparations. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
This is the Voice of America in Washington, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And see to come in the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. But first,
the United Nations Children Fund says it's imperative for young people in Zimbabwe to be at the forefront of the fight against climate change. UNICEF warns that their future can't be jeopardized if the global phenomenon goes unchecked. From Inyathi in the province of Matabeleland North, reporter Kuzai Musengi has the story.
In an interview with VOA on Wednesday, UNICEF representative Tajudin Oyewale said in an endeavor like the global fight against climate change, it is easy for youths to be sidelined. Oyewale had visited Inyathi High School to pay a courtesy call to Nkosilati Nyathi, an 18-year-old pupil at the school who was officially appointed by UNICEF as a youth climate advocate in 2020. Oyewale said it is critical that young people help lead the fight against climate change, since they are the ones who will be most affected by the rapidly warming shift in temperatures and weather patterns.
Children need to understand the meaning of all the actions that is destroying the climate so that they can retract on that as they grow. Number two, we're talking about new green technology that is necessary to change the world. UNICEF has a role to introduce those kind of knowledge to children and to support innovation in those areas so that we don't continue to destroy, but rather we are amending and we are improving.
Nyathi has a long history of climate activism, which began as a primary school student in his hometown, the popular tourist resort, Victoria Falls. Nyathi told VOA that he was inspired to become an activist after realizing the effects of climate change in his locality.
My work was inspired by what I was learning and what I was experiencing. It took off the unpredictability and uncertainty of weather patterns. It took off heat waves. Those are things which I saw in my own environment. I was curious to learn about these things. At the same time, I was being affected by climate change. So it was some sort of a coincidence, I might say. That is why it inspired me to become a climate activist after learning about climate change and experiencing these things at the same time.
In 2016, Nyathi won a $1,000 grant from UNICEF through the G20-backed Global Infrastructure Hub. With that support, he built a biogas digester at his school that is fed with food leftovers and animal waste to produce biogas, which in turn is used for cooking instead of firewood. Although Zimbabwe and other developing nations are low emitters, deforestation and the use of firewood are seen as major contributors to climate change. Statistics from the Forestry Company of Zimbabwe, the state-owned entity responsible for the conservation of forests, says the country is losing about 330,000 hectares of forest annually. The figures show that forests and woodland now cover 45% of its land area, down from 53% in 2014. Nkosilati, who attended COP25 in Spain in 2019 and the Youth for Climate pre-COP meeting in Italy in September, says he is relatively satisfied by most outcomes from the just-ended COP26 in Glasgow, Scotland. But he wants world leaders to commit to turn talk into action.
I think the COP26 was COP for action. COP for action meaning it's now or never. Out of everything that has been discussed, let all those initiatives materialize. We actually need what we talk about to materialize. I talk about something behind the podium. I need to see it on the ground because that is what is affecting me.
Oyewale says Nyathi's work has gone a long way to help bring on board the voice of the youth in the fight against climate change. One of the many resolutions at COP26 is the recognition that young people are critical agents of change and that governments must be encouraged to include young people as part of national delegations to international meetings. Climate scientists say activists like Nyathi are crucial to raising awareness among youths on the need to fight against global warming. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, I am Kudzanai Msengi.
A Kenyan ride-hailing company has introduced electric bicycle rentals for the first time in the capital, where air pollution and motor vehicle traffic are a problem. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
Kamal Budhabati and his team of technicians inspect the latest iteration of an electric bicycle dubbed e-bike, a task that they have continuously done over the past year to perfect the design and efficiency of the bicycles. When charged for 4 hours, the bikes store enough electricity for an entire day, giving cyclists an unlimited cycling range. The creators of this unimposing mode of transportation seek to revolutionize green energy mobility in sub-Saharan Africa. Budhabati is the CEO of Little, the ride-hailing company behind the e-bike. The company recently had a soft launch in Nairobi's Karura Forest to introduce the e-bikes to the public and gauge reaction. Budhabati says that the inspiration behind this innovation was to encourage users to adopt green energy mobility.
I think, you see, the world is now recognizing that we need to change. And I think as a part of that, we feel that in whichever smaller way we can contribute to the efforts that the world is making to make it a greener place, I think that's what we are doing.
The e-bikes cost about 50 cents for an hour. Access is granted by downloading the Little app on the Google Play Store. Once this is done, a scanner on the app in conjunction with a client's mobile wallet unlocks the e-bike for a limited period. The e-bikes are also geo-locked, ready for the next users at defined collection points around the city. Kalua Green is the chairperson of the Green Africa Foundation, an organization he founded in 2000 with the goal of encouraging sustainable environmental conservation in communities. Green says that the move to embrace green energy mobility in the country, though timely, faces myriad hurdles.
The challenges vary from policy, the infrastructure, and also other activities like that are required by the government that have not been done. The need to have all this in place has not been done. Infrastructure, because our roads do not have in plan the accommodation of cyclists.
The United Nations Environment Programme in Kenya, or UNEP, supports various initiatives encouraging adoption of green energy. Alexander Corner is a programme manager at UNEP. Corner says that an all-inclusive model targeting low-income countries, encouraging them to adopt clean energy mobility, ought to be in place.
Any sort of major achievement in decarbonizing or making the transport sector cleaner cannot work without the global south, and I think that's very important to understand. And I think from what I see and hear, that last COP was maybe a sort of an eye opener to understand this, that in the transport sector you really need to look at the low and middle income countries.
Budhabati and his team at Little are planning a mass rollout of the electric bicycles early next year in a bid to reduce carbon footprints and encourage clients to adopt green energy mobility. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
And now it's time for a Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great music from Africa.
Promise to stand by me. Promise we will stand together.
consider getting pregnant at this time.
Yeah, I go to anything.
You promise to stand by me. Promise we will stand together. Oh, yeah. Oh, people. And no matter where we stay, you go always in my mind. And I go to
For me, when you wake up in the morning, bends you up. You touch me slowly, na cheka cheka mwenzi. You keep me falling, bends you up. Na kwenye giza giza totoro, when no mwangaza wangu, chuma wangu wakupapasia. I love you too much, oh. Baby, you don't say I need you too much, oh.
tumewashinda shetani baby, tumewashinda mahasidi, tumewashinda mahayawani. Oh hala hala, kitanda kiwe sahani mpenzi, nikule nikufaidi, nichoshe niwe tabani. Oh hala hala, mi mtoto wa udongo, mvua siziwezi, kile mansie na magongo, na chechemea, chechemea, lumange tupige msondo, unirutishe. Ja bless my love,
amen.
Bless my baby, oh,
amen.
Bless my one and all,
amen.
For I am,
amen, 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 amen.
From the sun and the moon,
amen.
Midnight and the noon,
amen.
Nilingie kipenzi changu,
amen.
Wasije wa,
amen, amen.
Mysterious ways, maybe it's all part of the plan.
that was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline Africa team, we thank you for joining us tonight. And join us tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpoga.